AMAN.
This is In Focus on News Radio 1350 KMAN.
Welcome into In Focus here on News Radio KMAN. Nick McNamara here. Brandon People is off on assignment for the rest of the morning. Dave Lewis on the other side of the glass, and we're going to welcome our guest in here, Tim Schaefer from the KSU Institute for Civic Discourse and Democracy. Thanks for coming out, sir.
It's good to be here. Thanks.
Yeah, you made it in, and if you have to leave, you have to leave. We understand. Yeah. I won't get much more into that, but not necessary.
We should be good.
Yeah. Okay. But we're going to talk about plenty of things here. And first of all, it's always good to just kind of know what you've been up to. You know, you go off on a lot of different retreats, trainings, travels. Sometimes on planes, even. And
it's true. Planes, yeah. Trains. I guess I haven't been on a train in a while, so.
You know, I actually prefer trains just because I'm terrified of flying. So trains are always great for me. And I know Dave likes trains, too.
I love trains.
Yeah,
I love trains.
I still think when I was in high school, I grew up in Ohio, and I went to a place in New Mexico called Philmont, big mm-hmm. scout ranch.
Right.
You know, go out and hike and all kind of backpacking and stuff, and there was a whole contingent of us that went, but there were a number of, I think, both of the youth, but I think more so the parents, the fathers, who didn't want to fly. So long story short, we took a charter bus from southern Ohio to Chicago. Ooh. And took the train from Chicago all the way down. It was one of those fascinating experiences because I had never kind of been on a passenger train, especially at that age. I've ridden trains now since in Europe and other places, but it was this, I don't know, it was that kind of, you got to glimpse like part of the American landscape from, I think, a vantage point that you don't often get to see.
Yeah. And you got to see the plains and the desert all in one route. And mountains.
It was fascinating. It was really good. And I mean, it's true. Some of the work that I do at the National Institute for Civil Discourse takes me to Tucson, and I'll fly, and I usually will go through Manhattan to Dallas, then over to Tucson. And I'm always reminded, I'm struck and then reminded by just how varied the landscape is of the United States and how truly different parts of this country are when we just think about how it looks and feels and smells and all those kinds of things. And I don't know, for me, the kind of stuff that I do, especially when you start thinking about variations and differences and how we come to see the world and why we do the way that we do, like it's good to be reminded of that, because I've done that drive too, and I've almost run out of gas coming into Santa Fe, coasting down hills, right? Like, really hoping that there's that gas station.
Not a whole lot of gas stations along I-70 down there.
No.
Tucum Carry to Santa Fe.
No, so it's
pretty blank.
It's those moments when you realize, like, why? I mean, the people who live in those places are obviously going to see the world differently mm-hmm. than in some major metropolitan, really densely populated place, and understandably.
And you know, Nick, you're a California guy, so there's a lot more train accessibility there. But really, in Kansas, there isn't that much. You get on Topeka, and you can go southwest, or you can go east to Kansas City. But, you know, Kansas City is a big hub there, and so Amtrak is big with that. But I'm a big proponent of rail, not just travel, but for freight.
Yeah.
It's so much more cost-effective
than
all the trucks that we have on the highways. And with rails kind of going, you know, just not being quite as predominant around the area as it was, you know, 30 years ago, because there have been a lot of rail lines that have closed down.
Right.
And you're seeing more trucks, and that's added to the cost of the infrastructure with all the highways.
Oh, yeah.
And that deteriorates roadways much more quickly than anything else.
Yeah. So anyway, I was, I don't know, how do we get to the...
I was asking you about your travels.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
I do have to add very quickly.
Yes.
You came with the planes, trains, and automobiles.
That's right. And then
it just went from there.
You have two train nets
then
in
it,
here.
Then,
I mean,
it,
you
then it went off the rails.
Yeah.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah.
Look at you.
But if you do have to travel on a train, I really like February, especially if you're heading west, going through Albuquerque. You get to see a lot of the melting snow, and it's just very varied. It's very great.
I remember a couple years ago, there was this recurring story that it was basically like how you could travel across the United States from coast to coast, and it kind of showed you for like and it was totally one of those things that like was true in the slimmest sense of the word. It was for like travel across the country for like $58 or some absurd number, right? But it required all sorts of things. But I mean, it was one of those kind of intriguing moments of like, ooh, could I pull this off? But I didn't, alas.
Maybe you'll have to try it one day.
Maybe.
I know. I always loved it as a kid. It's always, you know, it was great.
Yeah.
It was great.
So.
And especially coming out to Kansas is a great trip. But I was asking you about your travels.
Yes.
And I understand that some of your travels have involved some meetings with legislators lately.
Yeah. Not too long ago, some state legislators here in Kansas, both in the House and the Senate, a small group. I've been in conversation with one in particular, Stephen Johnson, who's in the House. And he's been very interested in, I think, some of the work that we often talk about here of civil discourse and what that means, particularly what that looks like in a legislative body. And so a few others across the aisle, so a couple locals, Tom Phillips and then Tom Hawk, have both been part of some recent conversations, as well as Elaine Bowers, and of how do we think about this idea of civil discourse playing out in the legislature? What does that look like in a place like Kansas? And the National Institute for Civil Discourse has a program that's been really successful in a number of states called Next Generation. And so they've been working with these elected bodies for a number of years now, and some states have actually had them come back, so repeat kind of experiences, and it's an opportunity for them to, for these individual legislators to have a chance to reflect a bit as to why they got into politics, because usually there's, I would say for most, right, even though we want to kind of sometimes peg politicians in a certain negative light, I think that their intentions and their aspirations are well-intentioned and good, and so to be reminded of some of that, what brings people to that work, and then to be able to hear that and to share it with one another in a way that I think in a significant way humanizes people. So not just seeing you as the member of the party that I disagree with, but to see them as, you know, the person from the certain background and experience, the, you know, what were those kind of quintessential moments that influenced and shaped who they became, right, especially as it relates to their work. So so we're having some discussions and figuring out what this might look like. There's a national meeting in the fall where some of these Kansas legislators are going to go and participate in a national workshop with colleagues from across the country. And so, yeah, so there's some promising things that I would say. And so in those moments when the stories and things that are coming out of the Capitol are maybe not always presenting them in the best light, I think there are definitely some individuals, and I can't speak because I don't know everyone, but there's definitely a group of them who are really trying to say, how do we engage and work together for the betterment of the state in a way that is not just this kind of superficial thing, but really trying to get a little bit below that level.
It seems like I might be able to break through some of those barriers because it's, you know, in all forms of life, when you get into your camp or your however you want to refer to it, it's easy to get bogged down in your differences. And it seems like you're kind of helping bridge those gaps by sort of allowing people to realize a little bit about who each other are in addition to maybe who they are themselves.
Yeah, yeah. I think that humanizing piece is really important. I mean, for all of us, right? And that's part of, I think, the richness of doing any of the kind of dialogue or deliberation work that I do, is that if there's a way to explore contentious issues and looking at them as issues rather than all of a sudden pegging you're on the other side of the issue, so now you're my enemy kind of thing, it's easy, right? It's kind of this gamification of politics, and it only leads us to certain ways. The sense of, you know, the kind of right, wrong, and clearly I'm right, right? those kinds of things, right? I mean, that's how we approach this stuff. And so as much as possible, if we can step back from that kind of frame, I think it becomes really a helpful tool.
And this has been going on in a few other states already. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned Maine off air. You might have mentioned it on air too.
No. Yeah.
But there's like a few states. A lot of them seem to be along the coast, on the East Coast there too, based on the map that I was looking at. And I think Hawaii was one of them as well.
Yeah. And part of it's just geographical. The team that works primarily on this is based out of Ohio, out of Columbus. But the biggest thing, and why this a few years ago there was interest in Kansas in the legislature, but it didn't happen, is because the Next Generation program only takes place when leadership buys in, right? So it's not just this little subset of people over here doing their own thing, but there's really an opportunity for the collective body to engage one another. And so they really operate from a place that leadership needs to say, this is something we're going to invest in. take the time to do this, because as you know, legislators are busy folks going all sorts of directions, and so being able to get them all or most of them into a common space is sometimes a hurdle, but I think it's really important. And you referenced Maine. One of the things that Maine's been a state where they've done some sustained work, and something that they tried and it's been impactful is that instead of sitting as most legislative bodies do by party, so when we say across the aisle, we literally mean there's an aisle and they sit over there and you sit over here, they interspersed, right? So they've got Democrats and Republicans sitting with one another across the whole chamber. And, you know, all of a sudden it's different. Instead of pointing over there and saying they're doing this, when all of a sudden they're right beside you.
You know, you mentioned earlier in our talk about trains and travel, how the landscape influences the way you think and talk. If your landscape is divided down the middle or divided into your different camps rather than mixing you up, because I imagine districts aren't, you know, half the state on the east half is all one side, half the state on the left half, or the west half is all the other side. Mixing them up, it can change that landscape.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of insights, I think, to be taken from just the kind of changing up the norms, the expectations of how we operate. And I think for as long as it's been, thinking politics broadly here, kind of dysfunctional in some significant ways, that any attempt, even if they're small, kind of subtle things, can be really significant and impactful. So as much as it might just seem like, all right, who cares what chair they're sitting in, that actually can have an impact. And that's something that doesn't require a lot of lifting. Literally pick up some nameplates and stick them on another spot, and that might be a good first step.
And you're just in preliminary talks, I understand, in Kansas at the very least. It's pretty – it's up and rolling in a lot of other states. But who are some of the folks you spoke to? And building off of that, what does it kind of look like once you get past the that preliminary stage? How do you move forward?
Well, part of the conversation and why I've been part of it is the colleagues at NICD are really the ones who lead the Next Generation program. Where I've been coming in on this, and this is, I will say, Stephen Johnson in the House has been a champion of this, is the idea of how do we not just think about this in the legislature, but how do we think about this kind of as a statewide effort and initiative? So the idea that we are potentially tapping into some of our institutions that we're familiar with, so our Institute for Civic Discourse and Democracy at K-State, right? We've got the Dole Institute, Hocking. I mean, we've got resources. The Cooperative Extension System, for example, has been one of the really rich examples. We've been doing some training and work here in the state to prepare extension agents to use some of these deliberative practices in their communities when there are really contentious issues that arise. So it's not just kind of coming as the expert to provide that insight to. You know, as I often use, we can think about extension. If you've got a problem with your livestock, or there's something funny growing on your plant, right? Those are tremendous resources in those ways. But extension is much more multifaceted, and so there's, I think, a real opportunity. And we've seen it, and part of my research has highlighted people who work through those systems and use these kind of dialogue and deliberation models to engage people in more meaningful public talk. And so that's part of, I think, the bigger vision for what we have here in Kansas. It's still, as you said, very preliminary, trying to figure out what this means, what it looks like, but thinking about how does this not just show up in Topeka, but in communities across the state.
And with that, I think it might be time for our first break of the morning. We'll be back shortly. We're here more with Dr. Tim Schaefer on News Radio KMAN. You're listening to In Focus.
The KMAN Morning Show is brought to you by Pew Communication Services, a division of Economy Electric, providing all of your commercial and residential low-voltage wiring needs.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
4 out of 5 employers who post a job in ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. ZipRecruiter. The smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to the